This reel is to accompany slide lecture number 5. If we may see the first photograph, this is the entrance to the amphitheater improvised by the Department of Parks of the Commonwealth of Kentucky at Pine Mountain State Park for the production of Orrin and Irene Corey's The Book of Job. Let's go inside and take a look at the way they have used some boulders and planks to arrange a good bit of the seating, with a few canvas and metal chairs down front for reserve seat seating. The amphitheater uses lighting mounted on telephone poles left and right of the audience, the very simple staging area with the lights, some of them mounted in the staging area itself. Another shot shows us the Book of Job in action and the brilliant costuming and makeup that makes the characters look as though they had just stepped out of a stained glass window. Only 10 people play in this production, which is essentially a choral reading device of the Book of Job. The next photograph takes us to Hill Cumorah near Palmyra, New York, where the Mormon Church presents America's Witness for Christ, a pageant which has been tape recorded and which uses 450 volunteers who mime to the tape in working out the production for the audience. The audience is seated on planks which are placed on building blocks, and the stages are on the hillside. 7 stages with independent lighting, or lighting that can make them work all together. Lighting is buried in the shrubbery near each of the stages and also is mounted on towers hidden in the woods where it can throw or follow spot out to the acting areas. Water curtains are used in this production, with the pipes starting uphill and bringing the water in smaller and smaller pipes downhill so that the pressure will be sufficient to throw the water curtains a sufficient height into the air. About 13,000 seats are in this amphitheater. Another shot takes us to the site of the Black Hills Passion Play, where 5,600 seats in stadium style are placed on the hillside. That orange streak you see in the center is a rain shelter. The white building is not the ticket building. The ticket building is off to our left, up above, at the rear of the amphitheater. The white building is a nursery, soundproofed and where small children can be brought in and put to bed and their mothers can remain with them and still watch the production. An amphitheater this size requires mics for the actors, and the rather formal style of the Black Hills Passion Play played here gives us a very formal and slow-paced speech delivery, which is clear through the sound system to all members of the audience. Let's move on to a shot of the play. Here, Christ appears before Herod, and in the next shot, he is appearing before Pontius Pilate. Let's look next at the entrance to the Mountainside Theater for Kermit Hunters Under These Hills in Cherokee, North Carolina. Inside, we see a 3,000-seat amphitheater where microphones are not used. This was originally built for 2,800 seats, but is expandable with the addition of extra chairs to 3,000 seats. Notice the wide main stage and the 2 side stages. We can only see one of them here, of course. Allowing rather natural scenery, but allowing the play to be played continuously, isolating first one side stage, then the other, or the main stage as the case or need arises. Most of these plays play continuously except for a single intermission. Most have a rain policy that allows the play to be held up to 30 minutes until a shower stops and then to resume again. The reason is that so many people have come from such long distances and cannot remain over to see the show that they nearly always play the outdoor dramas, if it's at all possible, so as not to disappoint the customers. Let's go ahead another slide and we'll see the play in action. Here, Sally and his sons coming in from the left are giving themselves up to the soldiers. This play tells the tragic story of the Cherokees' contact with a white man from the time of the Spaniards until the time that the Cherokees were moved to Oklahoma. Let's move on. We see another shot of the play. Here, some of the Indians have returned to Oklahoma. I beg your pardon. Here, some of the Indians are just starting on their way to Oklahoma under the guard of the soldiers. Let's look at the next slide, which takes us to St. Augustine, Florida, the site of Paul Green's Cross and Sword, which opened in 1965. It has a wide main stage, as you'll see in a moment, and we're looking across at the base of one of the lighting towers and also at one of the side stages, which were left natural. The main stage is a series of ramps and platforms given to very unrealistic production style as far as the scenery goes. 2,000 seats, stadium seats in this amphitheater. Unfortunately, they are wooden and they don't hold up well in the salt air, so that they're now being replaced by plastic stadium seats. Let's look on now. Looking from the stage to the rain shelter at St. Augustine, we see the sound and lighting control booth on top. There's also an office for the lighting director at the very top of the theater. Backstage has dressing rooms and costume shop. Off on the right side, on the left stage side, there are shops and storage areas. Let's move on now to a shot of the play in action, and I think we have another shot showing how the lights, there we are, how the lights can be controlled so as to isolate different areas and build montages, very much the way the movies do when necessary. Here Menendez, the leader of the Spanish, is in prison, and a funeral procession that's taking place in Spain is pictured on the right. This is during the early narration of the play. Let's move on now to The Lost Colony. This was the first of Paul Green's symphonic outdoor dramas based on history. Most of these plays, by the way, are produced by non-profit corporations made up of local citizens, businesses, state leaders, and sometimes with the participation of state or federal government. Here, The Lost Colony, which owns its amphitheater and does its own production work, is really located in a National Historic Site operated by the National Park Service. Notice the wide main stage. There are two side stages, so the action can flow continuously. 1,800 seats in this amphitheater, and the second act setting is the permanent fort that you see in front of you. During the first act, the scenery that is used for the first act is placed in front of this permanent setting and is taken away at the beginning of the second act. Let's see if we can see some of the costumes. Here's one scene of the play in the next slide, and if we move on, we get another shot of a couple and a child. The Lost Colony, shown here, is typical of the outdoor dramas in that it attracts a family audience, and children are a good part of the casts in most of these plays. When I say a good part, certainly an integral part of the casts of each of these plays. Most of these plays center around one or two leaders who are representative of a group of people, and somewhat in the way of the Ernest Thaler plays of the 1920s in Germany, the people, in quotes, are usually the heroes of the productions, although they may be symbolized in the more specific characters. Let's move on now to the Elizabethan Garden, also at Manteo. Many of the productions have developed garden clubs or extensive gardens in proximity to the amphitheater. Some have developed picnic areas as well. Let's move on now from this to the entrance to Horn in the West at Boone, and if we go down through that to the amphitheater in the next slide, we see the amphitheater with a lighting tower on the far side and the edge of the rain shelter showing in the upper right-hand corner. They use metal chairs here. These are far from ideal, although at the time the amphitheater was built and the chairs were bought in 1952, people didn't realize how very cold those chairs would get in the mountain atmosphere, or how long they would stay damp after a heavy dew or a rain. Nowadays, most folks are using special plastic molded chairs, which drain with holes drilled in the seat, drain very rapidly during a rain, are very tough and durable, if stored over winter, last several seasons. They also cost only $2.25. We'll take a look at some of them in the amphitheaters that come up in just a moment. Another slide shows us a scene from Kermit Hunter's Horn in the West at Boone, North Carolina. The scenery is made of fiberglass and has been in place for 9 years. It has to be retouched, of course, every year. This particular scene happens to be set on a revolving stage. Let's move on now to another slide. This is Harrisburg, Kentucky, the site of first Home is the Hunter from 1964 to 66, and then Jan Hartman's legend of Daniel Boone, which is presently playing in the amphitheater. Lighting control is in the building to the right of the screen, to the left of the amphitheater audience. Sound control and the ticket booth are in the building with all the glass up in back of the audience. The audience enters through the back. Lighting is from towers that were made from large telephone poles, three of them together on each side of the audience to make lighting towers. And then lighting is from the top of this ticket booth you see there too. Canvas and metal chairs used in this amphitheater at Harrisburg, Kentucky. 800 seats. Let's see if we can see the show. Here's a sign of the play, The Legend of Daniel Boone in action, showing the use of one of the side stages to the right and of the main stage to the left at the same time. Another shot shows us what can be done with a potato patch. This is Big Stone Gap, Virginia, where The Trail of the Lonesome Pine is played by members of the community each summer. Folding deck chairs have been used in this amphitheater, and it has a back wall and painted mountains, even though there are beautiful mountains in the background, because there's some unsightly buildings behind the stage, and the people who are producing the play certainly wanted to block those out. Let's see another slide. This takes us to the site of Paul Green's The Common Glory at Williamsburg, Virginia. The photograph was made in the fall, but we can see the 2,400-seat amphitheater fairly well. We see one of the lighting towers, the one at the left of the audience. We also see the stage right proscenium wall at the right, and one of the side stages. Another shot shows us The Common Glory in action, and the third shot does the same, giving an idea of the effects that can be gained with playing out of doors. Let's go on now to another slide. This is the site of The Liberty Tree, Kermit Hunter's play that was produced three seasons at Sesquicentennial State Park outside of Columbia, South Carolina. Let's go inside now, and we see these plastic chairs we were talking about, here selected for color contrast. We see the lighting control booth on top, sound control booth, lighting mounted on top of the rain shelter, and we get some idea of the amphitheater all in all. There is a shot of the play in progress. Most of the outdoor dramas use dance for environment or for storytelling, either one. Here is a ballet that takes place within a sequence of the play. Outdoor dramas use much choral music, dancers, and actors. Let's move on now. This is the Dover, New Philadelphia, Ohio amphitheater for Paul Green's Trumpet in the Land, a tragic story of the Moravian attempt to convert the Indians along the borderlands in the Ohio country. Notice large lighting towers to the left and right of the stage. We're backstage looking toward the audience, 1,600 seats, plastic chairs again, as we've noted before. Lighting control is on top of a large earth mound that encompasses the rear of the amphitheater. When the amphitheater design was done, it was hoped that the area which now has the earth mound would have been the rain shelter area, but there was not enough money to do that, and the group compromised by putting the earth mound around the edge of the amphitheater. There are a couple of shots of the play. Here's one shot of the opening year of Trumpet in the Land, and the second photograph then shows us another scene from the play so that you can get an idea of the costuming and the effect of the play under lights. Let's move on now to Kodiak, Alaska, and on the edge of the bay where Frank Brink's play Cry of the Wild Ram, about the settlement of Alaska and Washington, Oregon, California by the Russians. This is produced by a few professionals and a lot of the townspeople each August for a limited run. It's been going on since 1966. The stage, then this was made in 1966, the stage, which is in the next photograph, was improvised with several lean-to shacks which could be opened up to show interiors. And in the, of course, when the roll drops are down under the lights, the place becomes a street in the primitive Kodiak town. The next slide takes us to Tahlequah, Oklahoma, and the rain shelter entrance to Kermit Hunter's Trail of Tears, about the Cherokee Indians at Tahlequah. This is the other end of the story that was started with Under These Hills at Cherokee, North Carolina. Let's go inside and at least get one shot showing the edge of the rain shelter with the lighting equipment and the plastic seats in place in the amphitheater. And then let's move on from Tahlequah to the Ramona play, which started in 1921. Here we are just getting out of the parking area and watching people go through the entrance to the play. The Ramona play is played by several professionals and with volunteers, about 200 to 300 of them, from the Hemet-San Jacinto, California area. Let's go inside now and take a look at the amphitheater, which seats 6,600 people in stadium-type seating. Microphones have to be used in this amphitheater, and of course when you use microphones you have problems with bumping and wind and other distractions, as well as the normal distortion of the human voice. Let's take a look at the play in progress. It's played during the afternoon. No lighting equipment is needed. Here is a dance sequence during a fiesta which takes place in the play. Gives you some idea of the seating. Let's move on from that to the Stephen Foster story at Bardstown, Kentucky. The site for a Paul Green play on the early life of Stephen Foster and using Stephen Foster's music. This highly successful play is in a 1,200-seat amphitheater, lighting and sound control on top of a rain shelter, restrooms, concession stands, and offices and ticket offices are in the rain shelter building. Let's go down and see if we can see it from another point of view. There we are in the next slide, showing the two side stages with permanent sets and the main stage where settings can readily be changed. Another shot shows us the play in action. Here's the Christy Minstrel scene from the Stephen Foster story. And if we move past that, we move on to Valdez, North Carolina, and a production called From This Day Forward, written by Fred Cranford. This amphitheater has a wide main stage and two side stages, and the play in it is done by the community theater people from the surrounding area. Let's go on now and take a look at the entrance to this particular production, showing the little rain shelter and concession and ticket stand up in the front. If we get a look backstage, well, here's the audience coming in, showing one of the side stages and one of the lighting towers and part of the main stage. If we go backstage, which I think we do, here we are in the next shot, we see that when they didn't have any backstage building, they got somebody to give them a house and had the house moved in and set up to use for dressing rooms. This play tells of the settlement of the area of Valdez by the Waldensians from Switzerland. Let's move on now and look at another amphitheater that was done on a very small scale. This one is at Sneedville, Tennessee, where Kermit Hunter wrote a play about the Melungeons called Walk Toward the Sunset. If we go up toward that ticket building, we get another look at people flocking in to buy tickets. And if we go from there, we see that the amphitheater is very simply designed with an earth floor and not permanent construction at all. Very little cash went into this, and the play, of course, managed to attract an average attendance its first year, which was 1969, of about 425 a night. Carson Newman College students and people from the local community make up the bulk of the cast. Let's move on now to an amphitheater constructed for Richard Stockton's Till the Daybreak, about the settling of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. This was played for just one summer, but it seemed to me that the particular combination of wide main stage, two side stages, and a thrust stage are an interesting way to allow flexibility to the director. Let's move on now to Paladur Canyon State Park, and well, all we got here is a shot of the state park. Let's go inside the amphitheater. There we are, taking a look at the plastic chairs and one of the side stages, and of the canyon wall that begins to rise up behind the stage to the right. Another shot shows us the other side stage during a rehearsal on a gloomy afternoon. Let's go on now to a shot of rehearsal in progress, and one more picture shows us a ballet from the play as it's being performed. A ballet is often used, as well as other forms of dancing, for storytelling as well as environmental setting. The next slide is of Beckley, West Virginia. We're looking toward the rain shelter from the parking lots, toward the ticket booth, which is on the right-hand side of that building. The building actually goes on through and has a wing as long as this one on the other side of that main building. Let's go inside now and we see how the amphitheater was originally constructed, 1,200 seats, and it's very much like an indoor proscenium theater with backdrop and so on. This has been changed, as we see in just a moment. The next slide is a shot of one of the plays produced there, Kermit Hunter's Honey in the Rock, about the founding of West Virginia's estate. If we move on from that, we see a shot of Hatfield's and McCoy's, which plays on alternate nights in the same amphitheater. Note here that revolving stages have been added as side stages in this production to allow the scenery to be changed more rapidly and to keep the play action flowing. Anytime that the play comes to darkness and the scene breaks, the audience tends to get restless and drop out of the illusion. Most of the members of the audience are interested in seeing a play continue in much in the same fashion that a movie or television show continues along without a break, except for commercials. Well, we do break for one intermission in outdoor drama, which gives the children a chance to go to the place, and gives folks a chance to go to the concessions and stretch their legs. Let's move to another slide, and we see a shot of the Hatfields and McCoys of a dance sequence in action. That gives us pretty much of a rundown on what's going on in outdoor drama and how people are doing it. I sincerely hope that if you've enjoyed looking at this, my name is Mark Sumner, and I'm with the Institute of Outdoor Drama at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Perhaps if you write your questions to us, we'd have a chance to give more specific answers. In the meantime, many thanks for watching.
Only at actual ceremonies. I have the thing where you can just type all these down.